If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome, everyone, to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast. I almost said it correctly, for Wednesday, November 6, 2013, alongside Ian Ferguson.
Aloha.
My sometime acquaintance. My name is Pat Country. How's everyone doing out there? If you're watching this live on Ustream, if not, you'll be hearing this on Thursday, the next day, on the 7th. Tonight on the show, we'll be talking about the, it's just come up today. Call of Duty Ghosts and the potential problems for the Xbox One. Along with that, the Adam Sessler speaking out about it and the controversy, little hubbub on the internet about that. Alongside that, the Hollywood commercials when it comes to video games and the over-the-top productions, and especially with the Call of Duty ones, we'll discuss that. We'll be discussing Nintendo shutting down Swapnote. We'll be discussing Dude Pinball, maybe a Big Lebowski pinball game. And also your Q&A, as always, if you want to ask a question, hashtag it on Twitter with CU Podcast, and we'll answer your questions at the end of the show. Ian, how are we doing in the past 2 weeks? The Fortnite.
The Fortnite's been good. I'm getting ready for a return trip to Buffalo for my brother's wedding. And in addition to looking forward to that, I'm looking forward to eating a lot of Tim Hortons, Bocce's, Duff's, Mighty Taco, and all of my favorite local eateries. I will come back for the next podcast probably 10 to 15 pounds heavier.
Well, that's good to know. That's very good to know.
Is it?
What's been going on with me? I found an Intellivision in the box. That was like the one system out of all the systems you think I'd be okay with, or at least that I would have. It's the one that I actually didn't have in the box. Not that it's a great system, but, you know.
I can hear the cheers from the listeners all the way from here.
So definitely one of the big stories came out this week, and it just released, is blowing up today, is its release. It's the Call of Duty franchise. The past, we discussed it at Luna Video Games, the past 6 years they've had a game every year.
Yeah, seven yearly games. And the drama the past few days has been that it will run at 60 frames per second at 1080p on the PlayStation 4, yet on the Xbox One it is going to run at 720p in order to get that 60 frames per second. And the controversy, if you want to call it that, that's surrounding it is lots of journalists, if you want to call phrase call them such a thing, including Adam Sessler, have been really downplaying the fact that the resolution is not the same, stating that resolution does not matter. And I would have to call bullshit on that for one main reason, and it's not graphics, it's not visuals. It's that if they had to drop the output of Call of Duty Ghosts on the Xbox One, mm-hmm, from 1080 to 720 to maintain 60 frames per second, that means there's issues optimizing things for the Xbox One. And that, while by no means is a death knell for the Xbox One in any way, shape, or form, it's trouble to see that sort of thing appearing so quickly out of the gate.
So what does that tell you? That way back in prepping this, that they just totally shit the bed in terms of knowing what proper tech specs they should have in terms of processing power versus video RAM and all that, you know, what bandwidth, like.
I haven't been a tech guy in many years, but like I said, what I can comment on and say fairly confidently is that it's not a good sign. What does it mean? I don't necessarily know. Their hardware is not running as smoothly as it should be. Something that is able to be done on the PS4 cannot be done on the Xbox One, and that is of concern. We're entering the next generation of consoles. Almost every TV that is sold today is a 1080p TV. People, I believe, are expecting from their next generation consoles that they're going to get 1080p out of these games. To see something, even though it's multi-platform and being released on current and next generation systems, Call of Duty Ghosts is a game that I think people are going to look to as a launch title benchmark to see what their system can do out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's only running at 720p, that is at the very least a letdown for people who are supportive. Maybe not for everyone, but I'm just saying, I think there's a degree of people being disappointed, rightfully so, that their brand new shiny system isn't pushing anything. It's not running at the maximum resolution.
The question is, will this affect sales a lot, you think? I mean, you're going to have people that are Xbox versus Sony fanboys either way, so it may not affect them. Or will it sway that, say, in between 20% of people to go PS3 versus Xbox and say, you know, screw this. I've been sold a false sale of goods, basically.
This is what I think. I don't think it's really going to affect anything at launch day. What I'm more concerned about is a person who does not necessarily fall into either camp, although I have stated on this podcast before that if I get a next-generation system, it'll likely be a PS4 for those exclusives. Hey, I really enjoyed my 360. My concern is, what's it going to be able to do in the future? A year from now, since we've got two systems that are doing a bunch of multi-platform games,
mm-hmm.
right? Is this going to be a scenario where the versions that come out on the PlayStation 3 end up being noticeable, or PlayStation 4 end up being noticeably better than the versions that come out on the Xbox One? I don't think the damage is going to happen immediately. I think it's going to be a long-term thing. In a year, people who are waiting to buy a system are going to look at what's up. They're going to look at comparisons of both versions that have hit both systems. And if this continues to be a problem for more than one title that's on both systems, yes, I think then eventually okay. It will sway people to the PlayStation.
So this is what I brought up to you before, speaking before the pre-podcast prep, was what is really the difference between 720p and 1080p? Most people don't even know. What that means is 1080p is, what is it, 1920 times 1080 pixel resolution, length versus height. 720p is 1280 times 720 lines of resolution that you're getting. Obviously, that means it's sharper image.
Correct.
That's really what it amounts to. That's really all it amounts to, is sharper image. You're producing more detail because you have more lines to draw out. However, my argument is that, you know, unless you have a TV that's, say, even 45, 50 inches, and unless you're sitting 5 feet or 3 feet away, you're not going to be able to tell the difference with a naked eye. If you're on a small screen, if you're definitely on a 20-inch TV, you won't be able to tell the difference.
No.
It doesn't matter then.
You're correct. Someone like me with my mole eyes, it's not going to affect me much. But like I said, I think that's the problem with this whole argument that's going around. A lot of people are saying things like graphics don't matter. Well, correct, to a degree that they don't. For me, this isn't a problem with graphics. This is, what is the underlying cause that is making the Xbox One not able to put it at 1080p? Is it going to affect your enjoyment of Call of Duty Ghosts? No, probably not. Visually, unless, like you said, you're playing on a massive TV, it's mm-hmm. not going to affect much. My question is, why can't the Xbox One do it?
We may not even get an answer to that. That's the bad part.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's going to affect anything immediately. In a year, I think that's when we're going to see, well, is this game having problems keeping a constant frame rate at, 1080? Does this game have to drop to 720? Is the power of the Xbox One, despite the fact that the systems on paper look very similar, and I mm-hmm. personally don't feel like there's got to be that big of a difference, is there something in the build of the Xbox One that is causing it to be an inferior system? And that's what's going to hurt them. And this, I think, is the tip of it, and people are going to be paying attention very closely. And while I don't think it's going to matter a great deal, if you want an Xbox One, it shouldn't stop you from going to get one. I feel like the internet at large is going to be dissecting everything that comes out for the Xbox One.
So this brings up to the point that someone, a big, I guess, journalist, you can call him, in gaming today, he's been around for like 10 years, Adam Sessler, came out today, and was it today or yesterday? I think it was yesterday. And he basically said, what's the big deal that it's not in 1080p Call of Duty Ghosts? 720p is fine. And he's getting a lot of flack for it.
Well, we just explained what the big deal is. It's not from a visual standpoint. That's not what you need to be concerned about. The big deal is, what are you actually getting in your Xbox One? What's your system capable of? And that's the larger problem. That's what a true journalist should be talking about is, look, this isn't, it's not to sound alarmist, and I can already hear people writing me death threats. But
what is it a harbinger of, basically? What if you can't do the graphics you promised, what else can't you do? Maybe?
Right, exactly. And that's exactly that's what it is. You know, what are we getting? And it's not to say you shouldn't get one, because, you know, there are some, like, D4, for instance, is an exclusive that I would love to play that currently is exclusive to only Xbox One. I'm saying don't get it. If it's got the games you want, get it. But it is concerning to me that it can't do something that people thought was going to be a given. And it is concerning to see a gentleman who, 3 months ago, stated that he expected everything to be running at 1280p.
Yeah,
or 1080p.
What he said was, and I think it was at SGC, which when I went to ScrewTech Gaming Convention, he said that next-gen games, 60 frames per second, 1080p, that's to be expected. And if you come from the standpoint that I do that, there's not a huge amount of difference between this next generation coming out and the current generation, then yeah, that must be what you're billing yourself as. Because if you're not getting better graphics, better frame rate, better processing power, why even have new consoles? So, I mean, if people look at them as being hypocritical in that aspect, because if you're saying this is what next gen should be and now it's not, then if 720p is only good enough, where are we at then with gaming in terms of what's next? Why buy an Xbox One? Why buy a PS4 then?
I think that, and it's not just Sessler. I don't know the names of the other journalists. Like I said, this has been a thing that's been on the internet for a few days now. And this is where the journalism aspect gets me. I think people are afraid to call it out because the Xbox One is roughly 50% of what is going to float these people's careers for the next 8 years. You know, releases on the Xbox One and releases on the PS4 are what these people are going to be talking and writing about for the next 8 years. And I think people are afraid to step on the toes of a system that is not out yet, and a company that is about to release a system when they know that a chunk of their livelihood depends on reviewing things that surround that machine. And sure. I think it's odd to be afraid of a system and to talk about the actual problems, because it isn't. It's not nearly as superficial as graphics. It's more about the performance and what are you get. Like I said, I've said it a million times, but what are you getting out of your machine?
Sure. So if you're playing Call of Duty, you want to be able to. Maybe I don't know. Maybe there would be slowdown issues if the processing power. If there's a bottleneck in the tech side, and once there's 20 guys on screen, maybe you see a few less frames. And obviously, people, if they're spending $500 on a new console, they want the biggest and the best.
Right. And I just want to be clear, because I don't want to sound one-sided. Sony's been extremely tight-lipped and reluctant to show things on the PS4 in the weeks leading up to its launch, including making people sign a lot of NDAs and very, very carefully curating what kind of news comes about the PS4. So there are people who have valid concerns about the PlayStation 4 as well. Shouldn't you be ready to show off your new toy to the world? Why the secrecy? So this is not just an Xbox One rant. I think what we're getting at is we have two systems coming out, and people are just about to realize how little difference there are between the 360 and the 3 as opposed to the 1 and the 4.
I said
that's the issue.
I said that at E3 in June, that when I was looking at the games, I couldn't tell the difference.
And we've been talking about that for a while, and I think that's the problem. I think the companies are now at the point where they realize that they have to deliver this console to the market, and it's going to be underwhelming.
So
I think that's all I can say on that.
I don't have a horse in this race. But no. With Microsoft, the way they've been treating, you know, indie games this generation, obviously the Kinect stuff, the DRM stuff, the used game stuff, I don't care if they fall flat on their asses. I don't. But I'm saying it's not like Sony's this magical company that's going to sweep in and do good either. But, you know, the point is you better deliver what you promise. So, again, it's a $500 system. It's not $300. It's not even $400.
Well, that's, if you go back to the Xbox One, that's kind of the other thing is, you know, you've got the PlayStation 4 at $400, and you have the Xbox One at $500,
and the Wii U's at $300.
If the more expensive system is delivering less than the $100 less system, then that is, that's a cause for consumer concern.
Sure.
Anyway,
we're gonna move on. Let's move to something lighter.
We might as well
just go into the Call of Duty commercials.
So
if you've been following. I haven't really. It's been building more and more. I'd say the past 2 years. I think it was with the first Black Ops game when you really saw the people, the average people, running around.
Modern Warfare 3, I think is what it
was. Was it Modern Warfare 3? So you start with this is the first commercial I'm ever seeing where no gameplay at all, a big Hollywood multi-million-dollar commercial, where you have people running around like. It's like a pizza delivery guy with an Uzi, and then you have like a soccer mom with a rocket launcher, and they're all happy, they're all shooting at a nondescript enemy, And it's like, what was the tagline? It was like almost like, have you gamed today or something?
I think the tagline was fucking tasteless. Was the tagline, because I find that awful.
So, it evolved from there. That was the first. I think it was the first Black Ops game, or whichever one came out a year or two ago, where you had Robert Downey Jr. appearing. You had that big Russian YouTube channel guy, the guy that fires off real guns. He appeared in the commercial. Remember, you had the girl on the horse running and like dropping bombs on people. Then it went from that to the one with Jonah Hill teaming up with Channing Tatum. They had the 21 Jump Street movie coming out. I think it was last summer. And then they're advertising one. Again, big budget productions. They're shooting and having fun. And Jonah Hill gets better at the game. My point is, are we really at the point now where we've gone full circle to where back 30 years ago, you couldn't really show the gameplay because the games were that bad. Now, you're not showing the gameplay in commercials either because you are so entrenched with your fan base that you don't respect them enough to show the new gameplay, or the games have changed so little that you don't have to show the gameplay year after year because there's nothing new.
I think it's something different.
Or is it simply the other third option? Is it simply just, I think I used the word circle jerk, that, hey, we have to keep just our marketing appeal up to people even know about this, so we have to produce over-the-top commercials just to make sure people still know there's a Call of Duty franchise, which is ridiculous, being that it's like the biggest game franchise.
All right, so to back up, I mean, I realize that I sound intense when I state an opinion. I really don't like the tone of the commercials. I realize that this is nothing more than I'm here, Patrick. I realize this is nothing more than basically online laser tag, and that's fine. I just,
sure,
the way they portray the modern war theme is kind of disturbing to me, that people are running around with guns, and what you don't get is the consequence. They are firing off guns, and they don't show them firing off at anything, because that is the tasteful way to make it a commercial.
Yes.
But, I mean, even in the game, you're shooting other people. I mean, it's still a simulation of war. And you know what? I don't give a shit if you enjoy it. That's fine. I have friends who enjoy it, and I played a lot of Call of Duty 4. That's a secret there, guys. I played a lot of 4, and I enjoyed it. But I don't like the cheery gamification of warfare.
And it's really the one that came out, whatever, a few days ago, I guess, the release trailer or release commercial with Megan Fox, of all people, where it's four people, and they have to get one of every type of gamer. You have a white kid, you have an African-American kid, you have a chubby gamer, and they're all palling around together, shooting in the back of their Jeep, and smiles on their faces as they're blowing people up.
It couldn't be more... Bros having a bro time is exactly what that commercial was.
But I'm asking, but who is that commercial for? Because if you like Call of Duty, you're going to buy it already. If you don't know what Call of Duty is that going to sell you? I would say no. It's like, what the hell am I... Was that a movie commercial? There's no gameplay.
Right.
The only reason you know it's a game, because at the end of the commercial, you see, you know, now on Xbox and the PlayStation. That's the only way you know it's a video game. That's it.
To touch back on what I meant to actually say the first time, was I feel like the other option that you didn't touch on was, this is big now and it's a money-making thing, and I feel like to a degree there's still a bit of embarrassment that it's a video game. They don't show the gameplay because they don't want you to know that they're selling a video game. Basically, it gets the attention, it gets the word out, you talk to it, you find out it's a video game, but I feel like maybe to marketing there's this cheesy bit of dark secret if they actually show, you know, a screenshot.
You think
of,
so?
I think there is. I think there's still that mindset that games are for kids or for basement dwellers. They just no matter how popular games get, there's still that stigma attached to them. There still is. It still exists. It's getting bigger, but that stigma still is attached. And I feel like by dodging... It's a big enough name people already know about, and by not putting video games in there, they can advertise the name, they can advertise the brand, without reminding people who don't care that it's a video game.
It's almost like the people at Activision? I don't even fucking know. They almost wish they were producing a movie. That's it's like, look at us, we're transcending video games, and now it's a movie. And almost like they're getting the rocks off on that aspect. You know what I mean? It's almost like the fact that they can recruit Hollywood stars to it makes it seem more important a game or more important an event than it really is. It's like some sort of weird thing going on. Like, even the GTA games don't do that. And that's like the, you know, GTA sells a billion games, but even they show gameplay. Even they know that at the core, that's what we do. We show the gameplay.
Right.
You know.
I think it's worth mentioning. It's not based on the commercial, but I should mention that from a customer standpoint, how bored these people seem with what they're buying, yet they feel like they're doing it out of duty. And the fact that...
Out of their Call of Duty.
Yeah, no pun intended. But, you know, and the fact that you mentioned GTA 5 is a reason I'm thinking about it. I had a guy come in today and he bought Call of Duty. I was like, so...
Ghost Dogs,
yeah. Starring Forrest Whitaker in the next commercial. I'm like, what are you looking forward to? You know, just to create chat, you know, I want to know if there's maybe something like this.
I'm looking to fire in a gun.
No, and he kind of looked at me and he goes, nothing really, but, you know, it's the new one that's out and my friends are getting it.
Oh,
so
God.
I have to get it too. And that sort of thing, sort of mindset has been around. I got a lot of that with GTA 5. And just to throw back to...
But that's not a yearly franchise.
No, it's not, but it's just, I feel, but it's still something that's recycling formula. And for all the people who attacked me when I dared to say I didn't want to play GTA 5, there's a lot of boredom surrounding that when it came out, too. I cannot tell you how many used copies I've already seen of GTA 5 because people just were like, I'm done with it. It's not as exciting as I thought. Call of Duty Ghost. People are buying it expecting to be bored. They're just doing it so they can keep up with their friends and keep playing online.
But
that's not fun.
Are they adding enough that... I'm trying to rationalize this because I rag on the Call of Duty games just because... I hate the fact that, not that they're, besides they're dumbed down first-person shooters, the fact that they're supposed to convey realism when they're not realistic. The only thing realistic about them are the weapons, but other than that, they're not realistic. But my problem is that, obviously, they're not adding enough. Are they adding enough to justify? The answer is no. To justify a $60 purchase each and every year.
This is what I've heard. And this is from a person who only played one. Call of Duty 4 was enough to justify the purchase for a lot of people because it was modern,
yes.
And it was the one that really brought the online to the forefront. Yeah. And then I heard Black Ops 2 last year was a very worthwhile purchase for a lot of people.
Okay.
They added a ton. The near future setting let them get away from the boring, you know, modern war thing that
sure.
a lot of people were burning out on. They added, I guess, a lot of online options. Now, keep in mind, listeners, this is not coming from a person who's playing. I'm just stating the opinions of customers.
We're going to backtrack to the Call of Duty.
Okay.
Where we left off on the Call of Duty, I think, if I'm not mistaken, we were talking about, really, the Hollywood commercials and using the regular people. And just real quick to reiterate, that what's disturbing to me about that, using the normal folks in a commercial, is that there's no consequence at all to showing all these people, the pizza guy, you know, called everyone can be a gamer and go to war and shoot around and doing the John Woo, you know, double guns, which does not appear in the game. You can't do that. It's and this is coming from someone I said before that I'm not anti-gun at all. But to me, you have to show some sort of responsibility when it comes to firearms.
Yes.
And when you're showing people running around, oh, literally with a smile on their face. In the new commercial with Megan Fox, you have four gamers. You have of all types. You have the nerd one. You have the chubby one. You have an African-American. You have another bro one. And they're having fun. Group of guys shooting up guns. You know, and it doesn't show them, like, getting shot. It doesn't show the horror of war.
Right. It shows them firing off the gun. It doesn't show what they're firing into, which even in the game is people. Like, and that's the problem. You don't have to show me blood and entrails to show me consequence. But even the Battlefield ones, like, you don't have to go all party time on the theme.
Yeah.
You know, you can do a decent war game based commercial. Like I said, Battlefield tends to do them okay. You know, you just show the gravity of the situation to some degree.
Yeah, well, like I said, again, this was cut off, I guess, for some people. G.I. Joe, a cartoon 30 years ago, that was a war cartoon fighting terrorists, remember? Cobra was a terrorist organization. It was aimed towards kids. It was written for adults, though, but aimed towards kids. But even that show in the early 80s had enough responsibility, the creators said, and if you watch the episodes, you see... In just about every episode, one of the G.I. Joes gets hurt or injured. It's not all fun and games. There is consequence to war. They might have gotten killed in the episode, except for Duke getting killed in G.I. Joe the movie, which they retconned because people were upset. But G.I. Joes got knocked out. They got hurt every episode. Some bad shit happened.
Right.
That if a cartoon 30 years ago is having more social responsibility than a freaking modern day commercial, especially in our PC age too, which is what's surprising to me. It's just, it blows my mind that that occurs. And then throwing in the Hollywood actors just to show, wow, we're cool enough, we're important enough that we can get Megan Fox and Tatum Channing, whatever his name is, and Jonah Hill in our commercial, Robert Downey Jr. It's like, who are the commercials for at that point? Who are you going after? It's just to fluff yourself up, have a circle jerk, that you have this great franchise, you can attract Hollywood stars and pay them probably hundreds of thousands of dollars to appear in your commercial that costs you a few million to do? I don't know.
Well, and if we got cut off, I mean, the thing that I wanted to mention too is I feel like there is, to a degree, one of the reasons you don't see gameplay footage is because they're embarrassed of the fact that they're advertising a video game. Video games still hold a social stigma. I mean, they're getting more and more popular every year, but there is still a stigma attached to video games. Call of Duty is one of the most popular, and to advertise it without showing gameplay is a tiny admission of, we're kind of embarrassed of what we do, but here's some Hollywood stars. It's okay that, you know, your girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever, plays this because, hey, Hollywood accepts it. And by the way, this is, you know, they don't deny that it's a game. They have to show at the end that there's, you know, it's on the platforms. But they seem to avoid the fact that it's a video game at all costs.
So there you
it's
have
a spectacle.
It. We are back, and I took off my sweatshirt. And hey, I didn't want to take off the sweatshirt to show off my nice cut off Pac-Man shirt, but I mean, it's hot in here, and you know,
yes,
I
didn't want to. You did want to do that. That's
no, I didn't. I really didn't. Okay, so we're going to discuss something that happened last week. Nintendo is not liking how their swap note system is being utilized by the fans out there and the gamers, and they're basically their user base. They're not really happy with it being used for, I guess, naughty messages, things like that. So Ian,
okay, what actually happened was Nintendo shut down swap note. They shut down swap note because in Japan there was two guys who had befriended two girls and were young girls who were using it for child pornography. And Nintendo quickly dropped the hammer on that and cut swap note. The problem with the situation, and there's a lot of people who are upset that Nintendo cut it. Yeah. The problem is this is one of the situations where I can clearly see both sides of the coin. I am going into the holiday season, the last thing Nintendo wants their flagship product, their 3DS, to be associated with is the sending of dick pics. Okay?
Way to put it subtly, but yes, that's what they're afraid of.
That's what they're afraid of. I mean, as much as Nintendo is for all ages and all generations, it does have a... It is considered still to be a very child-friendly device, or a child-friendly company that sells child-friendly devices with a lot of games that are challenging for young and old. You know, so they want this to still be something that parents feel comfortable getting their children. Thing is kids have computers and kids have iPhones and kids have all sorts of crap that 10, 12, 13, 14 year olds have. And Nintendo doesn't get the internet. You can take away swap note. This sort of thing is still going to happen. Nintendo has one of the most it's still a very rigid plan in place for how you can communicate with someone using a thing like swap note. So you don't know what swap note is.
No, I don't.
Okay, so this is what it is. Okay. You turn on your 3DS, uh-huh. And it's very cool. You have a friends list, and you can open up the swap note program, and you can draw a 4-panel comic, write, take pictures, whatever, and send it off to any of your friends. Okay, yeah. The thing is, to get someone on your friends list using a 3DS, you can't just send it to a random person. You have to add a person's friend code, and they have to add yours.
Okay.
When a person adds your friend code, say someone gets your friend code off the internet randomly, right, and adds it, it does not send a message to that person's 3DS saying, this person has added you as a friend. I could put my friend code up on Twitter right now, and 50 people could add me, and I wouldn't know it until I got one of their friend codes and added it, and if we both had each other's codes in the system, boom, we'd both appear on each other's 3DS. So that's a fairly secure system. So for...
Okay. It's almost like Facebook. You have to accept the person once you say add me. You have to actually accept.
Yeah, but even tighter because Facebook now allows for following. Correct. You have to both accept, and it's not like there's multiple levels of privacy here. They both have to do it. So I don't want to say that, you know, parenting is to blame, but all I'm trying to say is Nintendo, I feel like to a degree is over. They've done what they should do. Like if you want to keep kids safe using your products, you've done it. If somehow these kids are exchanging their friend codes with other old men and these things are happening, there's a greater problem here than swap note is all I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah, well, it comes down to Nintendo is trying to protect their consumers and knows what's best for them. They want Nintendo's always been about controlling their product. Always. Going back to the NES era when you can't even have freaking crosses on tombstones and DuckTales. Yeah. So they're always about, they think what they know is best for their consumers. Right or wrong, that's always been their stance. So they're seeing this as, wow, this is being used for some nefarious shit that we don't even want to be connected with. So my question to you is this. Do they have the right to do that? Do they have the right to police their product and shut it down if it gets to a point where they think it's being misused?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I feel like my problem with, I like Nintendo. I don't like Nintendo looking bad. And I feel like this is a situation where they risk scorning some people if they don't do something, and they risk pissing people off if they do something. And I feel like at this point, this isn't 96. The internet isn't new. It's not a boogeyman in a closet. I feel like most people know what the risks associated with using something connected with the internet are.
Sure.
So I feel like a lot of people who are looking at, it's not that they're overreacting. It's a serious problem that occurred. But you don't have to take down a service. I don't necessarily know that.
But how could you police it then? I mean, how?
I feel like they have, and since it's already linked to friend codes, they can ban. I don't know that you can. I mean, people should be. It's like you said, it's like Facebook. I feel like to a degree, you have to police it yourself. They've already put so many stops in there that, I mean, to get to that point, I feel like is pretty difficult.
But at least on Facebook, you're not supposed to be able to use Facebook unless you're at least 13 to create a profile. Obviously, you can lie and do that. And if you're a good parent, you can track that. There's probably parents that have no idea this thing exists. They buy their kid a 3DS, here, have a blast. They probably have no idea.
No, and that's true. And, I mean, kids don't necessarily know. You know, I mean, they're still learning. They don't know, you know, okay, I shouldn't give my friend code to this person. But, I don't know. It's a shame that they had to take it down. It's a shame what happened. It's not a program that I use, so I'm not even coming from a place of I miss using it, because I can't draw worth a damn, so I didn't use it. But, you know, I wish there was a better solution in place. And it's upsetting some people because they were supposed to bring, people were looking forward to Flipnote, which they started on the DSi, which is like a Flipnote, it's an animation program. And they were going to bring that over for free from Japan, but in Japan they suspended that as well, and they're not bringing it to the US. So Nintendo's really cracking down. They're in full-on panic mode, and they're basically just shutting down all of that online interactivity.
So it's a few bad eggs spoiling it for everyone else, basically.
Right. And I don't know, there are people out there who are holding their breath and thinking Nintendo will reinstate it, but kind of like you said, looking at Nintendo's history...
Why would they?
No, I think it's probably done. I think it's probably
done. It's too much of a risk, and unless they're going to go all, you know, NSA on you and then, like, peek in on what you're doing, then what, you don't want Nintendo doing that anyway. You don't want them to really monitor to that level. So it sounds like it's a fun, cool thing, but it's not essential to the 3DS experience.
For some people, like I said, for some people it was. There are people out there who, I mean, used it a ton. I understand where Nintendo's coming from. They want to protect their image and they want to make sure that doesn't happen again. It's a shame that it got to that point. It's also a shame because the first time you ever turn on Swapnote, the little... Her name was Nikki, the little swap note icon. Draws you a little picture about how you should never use it to make anyone feel uncomfortable.
Aww.
And everyone apparently did.
These freaking pedophiles ruining it for everyone.
Yes.
I just realized it's going to be really weird to go from, if you're watching this on YouTube the next day or so, me going from sweatshirt Pat to non-sweatshirt Pat. That's because I just heat up. I'm not trying to show off anything, so I'm gonna cover up. I feel self-conscious. Let's talk real quick about the dude pinball real quick.
Okay, we'll recap real quick. Because we think we missed it, but this is exciting to me. So this was a topic that we believe got cut a couple weeks ago. There was the Chicago Pinball Expo, and during it there was a mysterious group of women all dressed in dresses with like bowling balls and bowling pins sewn on. And they were going around handing out flyers. And on the flyer was a pinball machine on a bowling alley covered with an oriental rug. Next to it was a white Russian and some bowling pins.
Oh, well, the drink, not a person.
Yeah, yeah, a Caucasian and not the race. And and just said, dude, it's coming. And there was a website for Dude Pinball underneath it. Okay. And if you go to the website, it shows the same picture with a countdown, and underneath it, it says, new shit will come to light.
Which is a line from The Big Lebowski.
Right. This is amazing, because what it means is, in all likelihood, there is a Big Lebowski pinball machine on the way. This is cool for a couple of reasons. One, it is not a current Blockbuster or an aging rock band themed pinball
which is what Stern makes. Stern, the dominant, and for the past 10 years, was the only real pinball producer until Jersey Jack.
It's not a family-friendly, big-name license, which is what Jersey Jack does, like Wizard of Oz or The Hobbit. It's a niche. It's a well-known movie. It's a well-loved movie, but it's niche. This is interesting. The other thing that's interesting about it is this is not something that Stern would make. Stern only does... Stern doesn't take risks. Stern does two machines a year. Stern's already got their other machine in production. Jersey Jack, very small company. They can't possibly be thinking about anything other than...
Because they can't handle one a year versus two.
They got to do Hobbit. They got to get Hobbit out first. And it's not any of the boutiques, because the boutique pinball makers who do like 14, 15 off runs don't have the money for this sort of advertising. So who's making this? That's the question.
Mystery.
And what's awesome is if there's a third player in the pinball market, it is going to make pinball more accessible to people who like it. It should, in theory, drop the price of pinball machines a little bit as competition breeds cheaper prices and more creativity. Every week. Anyways.
It was the advertisement. But this is why it's important. And this is why it's great. If you don't know, again, repeating myself, but they missed it the first time. We have to record it anyway. The Big Lebowski was a 1998 Coen Brothers film. The Coen Brothers are actually very brilliant. They did No Country for Old Men. They did a lot. Raising Arizona, Fargo. The list can go on and on. Academy Award winning. Great writers. Great directing team. The Big Lebowski came out in 98. A very dark, twisted comedy. You had great characters like Steve Buscemi. You had John Goodman, who I think was might have been nominated at least for Golden Globe for his role. And of course, you have the dude.
Jeff Bridges,
one of my favorite guys. Who, as you find out, is actually like the dude in interviews, and if you saw Tron Legacy, was playing the dude.
Yeah, he's playing Cyber Dude.
He's playing Cyber Dude. So it's a brilliant film. It's really one of those where there's no real moral to it. It's just, and there's no real, it's not really a plot that has an ABC sort of structure.
Right, the fun is the narrative. The fun is the narrative.
You follow the dude along. It's basically a detective story. The dude's in every scene. You follow him along as you find out what the hell's going on, and all these weird characters just sort of get wrapped around him.
But because this is not such a... Because this isn't a movie that has an incredibly tight plot, I think it's going to lend itself to pinball well. When you look at movie pinball machines, like, say, the Tron pinball machine, for instance, right? The modes actually don't really have anything to do with the movie. There's Korra Multiball.
They just make up their own
Light Cycle Multiball, right? And you get a couple animations. But the dude has so... Big Lebowski has so many sound clips. So many things that you can do. Throw in there that would be great for machines. So many ideas. I guarantee you the thing is going to be themed, look like a bowling alley. And I don't mean just the actual alley. I mean, it's going to have the atmosphere of a bowling alley. I bet you the main overlay is going to look something like an alley, though. You could do drop targets for bowling balls. You could do return lane ramps. You could do all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And it's wide open. And I'm excited to see something that I truly care about come to a machine, because...
New shit coming to light.
I mean, so the new Star Trek is fun, but I didn't see the movies. Metallica, don't like the band at all. Machine's fun, but I don't like the band at all. The last theme that Stern did that I really liked was Tron, and that's a great machine, but I mean, I'm ready to see something that I can actually, like, connect with. And I think this is a stepping stone to, we're going from Blockbuster licenses,
safe licenses,
to niche, risky licenses, which hopefully will lead to original ideas again, like Medieval Madness, Monster Bash, where we see... It's not theme related at all. It's creativity. What does the designer want to do?
Because you're basically when you're creating an original pinball machine, you're creating a whole new story and characters.
Yes,
and adopting that to a table and different modes, different target modes, multi ball modes. That's what you're doing. And obviously Stern basically has gotten totally away from that. and gotten, to me, boring because of that. Because my favorite pinball machines aren't the ones that are themed, or, I mean, licensed. They are the original ones, like Medieval Madness.
Sure.
You know, and I'm not like even... Dr. Dude, stuff like that.
Dr. Dude is great. Because I played Medieval Madness so much growing up, I'm...
You're spoiled.
I love it. Yeah, I love it, but I'm a little... I'm a little tired of it, but that's the cool thing. A well-made pinball machine like Medieval Madness does tell, albeit a very simple one, it does tell a story. You know, you're rescuing the princesses and destroying the evil, you know, lords. I mean, you don't need a movie to do it. So hopefully we'll see this progression continue, and maybe in the next 5 years we'll see a mass-produced pinball machine that has no licensing attached.
Well, I said it before. I'm excited about... I love The Big Lebowski. It was one of those movies that it came out. First time I saw it, I didn't understand it. I'm like, this is really stupid. And I think it happened to a lot of people. And the second time they saw it, they got it. They got that it was supposed to be really about almost nothing, and just following these weird characters around and seeing them interact and being vulgar towards each other and just having these wacky adventures. And that's why it became a cult hit.
Yeah. Like you said, there is no moral. It's just a fun story to follow. It's definitely a see-it-more-than-once type of movie to fully appreciate everything that happens. And I adore it, too. I actually got to see it in theaters in Austin, Texas at the Alamo Draft House.
Really?
But, in 2002.
You never told me that.
Yeah, I got to see it at the Alamo Draft House, which is a movie theater that has wood bars in front of every row of seats so you can order beer. They had a joint rolling contest before the beginning of it where you had to go on stage and roll pencil shavings because, I mean, that plays a big part. I entered the contest, and it was really fun, but yeah, no, I got to see it on the, you know, full screen, and that was it's one of the favorite things I've ever seen in a theater was that.
Very cool. So like I said, I only have room for one pinball machine. My main cabinet, if I get a pinball machine, it's going to go right there.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to shift it around. It could fit. It'll fit if I do it right, if I put it out this way. I'll make it fit.
I'll sit on it for the next marathon.
Is that you'll sit on it?
Yeah.
The whole point is that I love pinball. They're beautiful. They're machines. It's just something different about interacting with a machine versus a video game. It's just a different feeling. I hung out with Pro Jared and Rue in Portland, and they weren't big pinball guys, but I showed them, introduced them to pinball machines, and I played Medieval Madness with Jared for like an hour.
Yeah, every
you know,
time,
and he loved it at that. You know what I mean?
Every time
it.
I drag someone out with me to the High Dive to play pinball, they get it immediately why it's appealing. People think they don't like pinball, or they think it's boring because it hasn't been in the public eye for 15 years.
Yes.
No one knows what pinball is anymore. If they played it when they were growing up, they've forgotten.
Yeah. And arcades have died off too, which doesn't help.
It always comes up, you know, people ask me why I like pinball so much. I can tell you, I work 9 hours a day in a video game store. Pinball is tangible. It's a metal ball in physics in a machine. Yeah. You know, it's something that you see and play and you can manipulate with your hands. And it's fantastic. This reminds me, you've got to make some announcements, but that's what I plan on doing at MAGFest for most of the time, is hiding and playing the pinball machines for 4 days.
We should. And this year I won't be able to send you pictures about and get you all jealous about all the nice machines I had.
You sent me a picture of a Centaur, which resides 45 minutes from here.
Well, whatever. The whole point was,
anyways, you were supposed to make some announcements when you came back.
Yeah. Yeah, and we actually caught up. We've only been doing this for an hour, and that's with repeating two of our topics somehow.
Nice.
So Ian and I are going to MAGFest. I think I said that before.
Yay.
On the website, I'm going to start finally. I have about 20 new contributors ready to go on the website. And some that I've talked to still. And so the punkeffect.com will not come back, but it's going to be bigger. It's going to be better. It's going to have multiple posts per day, not just one. And it's going to be totally reskinned at some point in November when I have time. Now that I'm done with my NES Punk episode for this month, I can focus on that. I think that was my only really big announcement. Did I have anything else besides that?
I thought you did. I thought that was one of
those. Yeah, me and you at MAGFest. That's it.
Okay, there we go.
We're going to be at MAGFest, so you can bother Ian. I can't give away what panel's going to be on. I'll be on the Retro TV panel. Maybe Ian will be on there. There might be a Video Game Years Live panel. There is a secret super panel that I'm going to be a part of that I cannot reveal yet, but it probably will be revealed sometime in December, and it's three people that are going to do something really cool that really hasn't been done before, and whatever.
It doesn't involve me, guys. Don't get your hopes up.
It could in the future, but for now, it doesn't. We can't. This is enough. I'm still surprised you're doing this. This is like our fifth or sixth one. So, it's time for Q&A. Again, we've only been doing this for an hour, and again, we must have ran through a couple of the topics, like Swap Note. So if you have in the chat, real quick, if you want to ask a question, use hashtag CU Podcast on Twitter. I'm going to tweet it out right now. Ian, you already took your piss, so you're good to go.
I'm ready.
We should do that more often. We should break it. So you can that's a lot of beer. That's like three beers right there in Tecate right there.
It's two.
Did you reach out for a sponsorship yet for Tecate? Did you reach out?
Learn your math. 24 ounces is 2 times 12. A beer is 12.
It's not 8 ounces?
No.
It's 12 ounces?
It's 12 ounces, I bet.
For a can? Really?
12 ounces.
Q&A time.
Weights and measures.
Well, we're not good at math in the U.S. All right, cool. So let's see what questions we have on the CU podcast right now. I'm debating whether or not I should take off my sweatshirt again. It is a little hot. We should both take our sweatshirt off. We should.
Seems like a horrible idea. That's more of me that people can see.
I'm taking one off. It's hotter in here. And again, the sleeveless, this was not by design.
It's because I'm radiating heat.
You actually do radiate heat. But at the swap meet, there was a guy selling a bunch of video game shirts and movie shirts for a dollar each, except 90% didn't have sleeves. So I was like, this is an awesome Pac-Man shirt. I got to get it. So, yeah, okay. Let's go. Questions on the CU podcast, which could be our favorite part of the show, because it's rapid fire and it's fun. All right. Let's go going back to, I usually try to go back a couple of days, because that's when they start. The questions. Well, we got a decent amount here. Let's see. When was our last podcast? Our last podcast was about 23rd. Okay. Okay, that was the last podcast.
Are we still recording?
Yeah, we're recording. Okay. I didn't stop it.
That's good.
Okay, here we go. I was trying to get the ones from like last week.
Okay.
This is from @Rick95051. What kind of TV do you guys recommend for retro gaming to get the best picture? I heard Sony Trinitron PVMs. Thoughts?
I don't know any of the. I don't Tactical know the specific. Model. However, if it's just for gaming, there is a popular Sony RGB monitor that is tough to find that is going to probably be your best for your picture. As far as TVs, if what you've heard is Trinitron, I would go with it. Honestly, tube TV is going to be better than
high def. Is he talking about retro games on like a 360 to play?
No, he's talking about playing actual retro games.
They go out to a swap meet or Craigslist and buy a TV for $10.
Well, a Trinitron is an old tube TV. He's looking for the best one.
Oh, like the flat tube.
Yeah.
Oh, flat tubes are beautiful.
Yeah, flat tubes are really nice.
I have one here. This Daewoo I got for the marathon, that's a flat tube.
Yeah.
They're nicer. They're sharper.
Those work real well. And I've heard that RGB monitors, if you want to get super nerdy, are going to be even better. But you can only really do like games or computer applications on those.
Okay, very cool. The bad news about that is some countries probably still produce them, but in the U.S., it'd be hard pressed to go to a Target and find the CRT at this point.
You can't. I think someone actually told me
they're basically illegal at this point, right?
They looked all over San Diego and they could not find a CRT TV new in the store. But that was like a year ago.
But again, go to the swap meet because people are just giving away for like $10-$15. You can find. I got this for $10, and this is a nice. What is that? A 19-inch.
I always tell customers if you live in especially like a place like Ocean Beach, walk up and down the alleys on trash night. Yeah, I mean you will find one.
Okay, cool. Next question. Oh, this isn't really a question. This is from @7MinutePsycho. I'd love to see you guys compare contrast the old TV ads for video games as well. Well, we kind of talked about it with Call of Duty. An old TV ads you had, originally for the Atari games, you couldn't really show the gameplay at all because they were so simplistic. So you had like Phil Hartman talking about, yeah, I'm going to play hockey, and not really show the game. You show for a second. Then you transition to Nintendo, where you actually could show the games, and you showed a lot of kids playing the games. That's who they were marketing towards.
Those were, yeah. I mean,
which are great commercials.
You get some wacky ones like the Ninja Iron Gaiden Sword. One. Where the kid's sneaking around into the parents' house
and to kill someone.
He ninja throws the cartridge into his system, but it still shows gameplay.
Yes, it does.
They were definitely more targeted.
More playing on a kid's fantasy with the game.
Then you enter into, like, the place that's, well, we're jumping, but those commercials kind of stayed like that for a long time. Then you enter into, like, the PlayStation 1, and you start to see the transition, like, when they'd advertise Final Fantasies. You still see a little bit of gameplay, but they mostly focus on the cinematics and the graphic aspects of it. And then you get to now where, I mean, shit, you don't see much gameplay at all.
Well, Battlefield did it. Call of Duty said, "Nah, we don't respect you enough to show gameplay." This is from at Shane Prutzman. Can you and Ian rank the Zelda series from your favorite to least favorite? That's tough for me. I'll give you a couple of my favorites. I'm not a huge Zelda series fan. I like a few of them. I haven't played probably half of them, but what are some of your...
I'm not a big Zelda series fan either. So if I had to, I can easily rattle off some that I do like, though. Zelda 2 is my number one. Zelda Link's Awakening would be my number two. My number three would probably be Wind Waker. Mm-hmm. And if I had to pick a number four, I guess I would go with Link to the Past. But at that point, I'm stretching. I really want to play Majora's Mask. It sounds great to me. And it's also one of those Zeldas that's not like a normal Zelda. And those are the ones that always seem to click with me the best, like Zelda 2. So hopefully at some point I'll get a chance to play that.
I have to do, like, a, at least for me, a bucket list of games that I have to play that, almost like how I've never really seen E.T. I've never played through Ocarina of Time. So I feel like I have, see that look?
It's not the Ocarina, because whatever. E.T.
Well, you look like E.T. right now. Yeah. But anyway, so I have to play through Ocarina of Time. I've played it, I just haven't played a chunk of it. I probably played it for like an hour back in the late 90s. You know what I mean? So I have to do that.
Sure.
To say, because people say that's the best one. But I love Legend of Zelda. I love Zelda 2, not just because I grew up with them, because I think they're great games. And Link to the Past is obviously fantastic. Some people think it's the best game on the Super Nintendo. It's obviously up there, but that's what I like. I have not played the ones in the Game Boy. I have not played any of the Game Boy ones.
Put Four Link's Sources. Awakening on your bucket list, because that's fantastic.
Oh, I got both versions. I have the DX version and the right one. I will do that.
It's short and sweet. It's fun.
Okay. The next question is from... at Hockey Bones Beer. Is that a brewery? What's your favorite Genesis game?
I think we have a broader favorite Genesis games question later on, if I saw, but...
I'll mention a few.
Let's just get those on one. Rocket Knight Adventures. Mickey Mouse Castle of Illusion. Probably one of my all-time favorite platformers ever is Sonic 3 plus Knuckles, when you actually put them together and you get the full game that's massive with 12 levels and save spots and all the fun stuff.
Do you combine it with the first one or the third one? You do that.
Three and Knuckles are two halves of one full game.
Can't you use Knuckles in the first game if you put it together?
You can also use them. No, you can use them in the second game. In the first one, it just gives you a random bonus stage.
Oh,
no, but cool. Sonic 3 and Knuckles is one game split into two pieces. You put it together and it gives you the full game.
That was a good marketing technique. They put Sonic and Knuckles with the systems, and then you had to go out and buy 3. That's a cool idea.
But yeah, it actually changes up some aspects of the game when you put them together. Like when you put both together, you can play through all the levels as either Sonic, Tails, Sonic and Tails, Knuckles. It gives you save spots.
Ian, you have to make me a video game bucket list. Like, I've never experienced that either.
That's really, really good. I don't know. I love the Genesis. I could really keep on going. Shadow Dancer's fantastic. I'll just let Pat rattle off some.
It's going to be really tough for me, the Genesis expert. I always enjoyed, this sounds really bad, because, I mean, I'm trying to think more of, as a kid, what I played. Screw it. I love NHL 93. That's a fantastic game, sports or not.
I liked 94 better, but...
But 93 is what the one that started it off, and, like, this is an awesome sort of fun... What a fun game. Like, my friend used to keep stats of that. Like, they'd actually say, oh, Brett Hull scored... They actually would keep... Because there wasn't a season mode in the first one. They actually would keep track of it. You know, Alicia Dragoon, which I reviewed,
is really a
fantastic
good.
Game. Hell, just even like their version of Outrun, since you couldn't get a good port, it was good on the Genesis.
It's got really good shooters too. I like even the shooters are good. Because like Biohazard Battle, I've never owned it because it's expensive. But Musha Aleste, which is the one that goes
that
for
one
over 100, it's a blast. I mean, emulate it. Just play
is that
it.
One of the most expensive Genesis games?
Yeah, it's that and Crusader Senti are up there as some of the most expensive.
General
ones.
Chaos.
General Chaos is a really fun good. One. I mean, the Genesis library is tragically overlooked because there's nothing out there currently to remind people to go back and look at the Genesis because Sega's not making systems anymore. I think that's part of the reason why it's fallen off, but there's so many good games for the Genesis.
I think I own like 275, or I own a decent amount that I've compiled.
Not enough.
Not enough. It's got to get more of that. They're sitting in the game closet. Okay. I could think of more if I really could. I loved the original Spider-Man game.
Oh, that one's fantastic. Where you take the pictures and they turn them into web fluid.
Yeah. Could understand it as a kid. If I went back and played it now, I probably would understand it a lot more.
It's a tough game, but it's fun. Yeah.
This is from At Seeing the Destroyer, Matt, I think, who's usually in the chat. You mentioned Rift Tracks last time. What is your favorite MST3K episode? Mine is Overdrawn at the Memory Bank, which is a good one. Which is Raoul Julia's last movie, I think. What's your favorite?
I love MST3K, but all I remember it is watching it when I was in high school, and I can't think of a specific episode. I used to just watch it in long blocks when they would run it like over and over on Sci-Fi at night.
Well, I was more of a Comedy Central one. I love Jewel better. I like Mike, but Jewel I thought was better. So my favorites are Cave Dwellers, which I have in DVD, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, which is from the late four, basically the third to fifth season to me were the best years. And then Mitchell, Joel's episode is fantastic. They rip into Joe Don Baker, who's just a slovenly, just boorish cop in it, who is supposed to be the hero, yet he's drunk half the movie, is so out of shape, you can't believe him for a second, and he like is like making out disgustingly with Linda Evans as a prostitute. It's hysterical because you cannot believe that they thought that would be a good protagonist for a movie. And supposedly, according to the episode guide book, that Joe Don Baker actually found out about it and was so pissed that like he's actually has a grudge against him for that. So they did another Joe Don Baker movie that they shot in freaking Malta. They did it in the 10th season, the last season, called Final Justice, where he's like this, again, out of shape. You know, who'd have thunk it? Like redneck sheriff that goes to Malta for some reason and is gunning down people with a six-shooter. This is absolutely ridiculous. I'd say half the episodes are really good, though.
I wish this question had been asked of me like 13 years ago because I could have given an answer. It's one of those series that I love and I keep meaning to revisit, but I haven't had the chance.
Alright, next. Oh god, this is probably my favorite question so far. This is from at Dr. Nerd 89. Hey Ian, when you first met Pat, what was the first impression he had on you? Aside from looking like a grown version of Munchie. I'm not sure who Munchie is.
Honestly, and this is...
He's asking me what I thought of you, though. What I had on you, or what you had on me? When you first met Pat, what was the first impression he had on you?
Yeah, your first... The impression you gave of me.
That I gave of you?
Yeah.
When you first met Pat, what was the first...
Because he posts a picture of Munchie later.
I thought of you. That's what he's asking.
I think he's asking, what I...
Okay, go for it. That's probably more interesting anyway. What did you think of me on? This is 2008, the summer of 2008 when I visited.
No, it's really not that interesting because I saw this one earlier and that's why I think it's of him because I think he's chatted with me on there and he posted a picture so I had a reference. He was like, in case you don't know who Munchie looks like. And I don't think you look anything like Munchie. It's pretty boring. My first impression of Pat isn't the problem. My first impression of Pat, when he came to San Diego to visit.
I visited for Comic-Con 2008.
Yeah. When he came out and he first discovered the store, my first impression of Pat was actually, oh, Jesus fucking Christ, here's a somewhat normal person who wants to look at the boxed Nintendo games. And
you had boxed Nintendo games when I came?
Yeah, yeah, that first time? You got Prince of Persia for like $7.
That was there.
Yeah.
And then I got the Color Dreams game.
Yeah. I don't remember which one.
Pest Terminator.
Yep. So my first impression of Pat was actually pretty good. He was pretty amicable, pretty friendly. Didn't seem like he was in it for the money. Seemed like he just liked the games.
That's funny. He's in it for the art, not the money. This is before...
Well, no, because really I remember we talked about that sort of thing because I'd been working there for a few years and, we had just, and that was becoming an issue where, people who knew nothing about games were coming in just trying to find the thing that was going to make them a buck, and that wasn't what you were doing. You told me that you're trying to complete your collection. You told me that you were almost there.
I probably had about 60 to 70 games left.
And, like I actually saw Pat a couple of times after that before he moved here, and my impression of Pat was always that he was... pretty amicable fellow. That didn't change until I got to know him personally.
Thanks, Ian. That's really good. I remember being surprised when I moved out here in 2009, and I guess during my courting phase with Ian and trying to get him to be friends with me, which is really weird because when you're a guy, it's hard to. I've always had trouble making friends with. This is now. You guys are gonna find a lot. I've always had a lot more difficulty making friends with guys versus girls for whatever reason.
Same here.
With guys, there's a lot more barriers. It's more competitiveness. With girls, you don't have that. The only thing you might have with a girl is you might have sexual tension or whatever. That's a whole different issue. But with guys, there's this whole other dynamic going on, especially once you get older, get out of college. So I remember asking Ian, this is within probably a month and a half, I said, Ian, go with me to this swap meet that's nearby and get up and get there at 7. And he, to his credit, you did it, to your credit. And I'm not sure why, because if it was me, I would not have done it. And I remember you being miserable, but I guess it said something for you trust me enough to actually hang out with me to do it, and you might have fun with it. I don't know. You never did it again, but at least you did it.
No. Well, and here's my thing, and I don't want anyone to take this the wrong way, but when I meet someone who moves to San Diego, I've been there. I've moved from San Diego. I got up and left everyone and everything I knew.
Oh, so you felt pity?
No, it's not. That's the thing. It's not pity. But I know what it's like to try to fucking make friends in a place that where you know no one. So generally, as long as people don't come across as total creepers, I will. If they suggest something to me, I want to do this, I want to do that, you want to come along, I usually just say yeah. And as long as the first time goes well, then generally I will be friends with that person. The thing is I'm not a morning person. Pat can tell you that. My girlfriend can tell you that. Everyone who's ever known me can tell you that I'm not a morning person.
I'm not either, though. But I still go to the swap meet.
So the thing was, I went with Pat to the flea market once because I wanted to see what kind of person Pat was and see if there was a friend there. And there was. However, not at 7 in the morning. So okay. I've never gone to the flea market since.
Okay. There you go. Somehow we've not killed each other. This is from at Mike Lorette. Thoughts on the Xbox One frame rate, resolution. We talked about that.
It's a big sack of wieners.
Going back, this is from at Segata Sanshiro 1. Going back to Japan next month, is a PC Engine worth it?
Yes.
I've never played. Come on, of course it's worth it. Especially in Japan where they're like $25.
They're not that cheap. Here's what you do.
They're cheaper than here.
Here's what you do, and I'm dead serious. If you want to know what you do and you're really curious about it, go to Japan. Mm-hmm. Find a PC Engine Duo R.
Which is what you have, right?
Yes. It is the most reliable model. It's going to be cheaper than piecing everything together. And if you're lucky, very lucky, you will find one that is already modded.
In Japan, you'd find one already modded? Potentially?
If it is not, it's okay, because, and this is where I might be wrong, but I believe my buddy has told me, and he's always said that modding a PC engine is easier than modding a TurboGrafx, because of the different pins.
Yes.
So, you want that anyways. The CDs, when you really get into the PC engine, or the TurboGrafx, you quickly exhaust the library of card games, and you realize most of the best games are on CD. Okay. The CD is naturally region-free.
Yes.
It's a more reliable CD.
You could even burn them
if you wanted to. It's not like you're stealing money from people at this point. It ruins my hunt. So it's good. And it has better capacitors. You won't get capacitor problems like you will with a standard Duo on either side. Like I said, finding a person to mod it here would be fairly easy, but it's just, you can find that system, but make sure you get the Duo R. They should be a dime a dozen. I don't know what they're going for over there. If you set aside 200, 180 to 200 for it, you should be able to get it.
Could they also, if they just want to get the CD-ROM too and get that system for like $80 or whatever, and then they can still play the US games and then get an adapter for US games, they can do that, right?
Well, you would still need everything together.
Yeah, but the point is that could be cheaper. Maybe the Duo R is like double the price. But no, you say they're not $25. If you get just the little square PC engine, they're not that much money.
If you just get the square PC engine, they're not that much money. But what I'm trying to get across is if you get really into it, you will see that our vision of the PC engine, the TurboGrafx over here, is skewed because we did not see many CD games, and all we saw were card games. We saw a lot of card games.
We saw 94 card games and, 35 CD games.
But the majority of that library is CD. And not only are you getting a system that plays both, but you're getting it with all those. You don't have to find those stupid upgrade chips. You don't have to find a system 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. It's
arcade
all in
car,
there.
Yeah,
it's just, in the long run, it's easier. But yeah, it's an amazing system. Absolutely get one.
Okay. Next question is Someone in the chat said the Mario underneath there staring into their soul. I just think that's funny. That is showing up. That's going to be there, I guess, for the rest of it.
Evil.
This is from at Mega5K. Megan was in the chat, I believe. What are your thoughts about the rumor of Nintendo remastering Nintendo 64 games in the future? I haven't heard this rumor.
I haven't either, but if they're going to, I imagine Nintendo would probably put them up for download. I mean, every company is doing it now. I don't know what they have left. I mean, Majora's Mask, they can't do Diddy Kong, that's rare. Without delving too much into what they could do, I have no problem with it, as long as it's for a reasonable price. I mean, if they want to do two games per disc, like Sony did during the PS3 era when they HD remastered their games, or if they want to put them up as downloads on the virtual console, sure, do it, fine.
I think the charm we lost if you like try to remaster Ocarina of Time. I'd be like, what? Really? You have so many Zelda games that come out. You have like one or two per generation of console. It'd be like, why would you need to experience that one like upgrade? I don't get it. The Zelda games to me are almost repeating the same thing anyway. Well, except not every year, every like 4 years. That's the difference, at least.
I guess the question wasn't maybe specific enough, but if I were to guess what remaster means, it just means to upscale, like they did with the like PS3 did with PS2 games.
I'm guessing she means like totally redraw it, like HD remaster, like DuckTales. That's what I'm guessing. I don't think it's a good idea.
See, if they do that, I think it's a bad idea. If they simply want to up-res it for download on the Wii U or something,
but sure. You're going to be up-resing polygons. I mean,
it still looks smoother. You won't have aliasing and stuff like that. I mean, I'm not like totally against it. I guess I don't necessarily see the point.
I mean, they re-released GoldenEye.
It's rare. They can't.
But I mean, they've done a version of it at least. Do we need it? That's the whole point. You know. Anyway, but actually, on the computer, the people do on the computer. They've redone GoldenEye on the computer. The fans, they've done it.
Well, yeah, that's so. My guess is, I mean, we're bickering now, but I think that's what she refers to. It's just that sort of making it look smoother. And, I mean, fine.
All right. This is at Andrew Parada 1. What is your favorite WrestleMania match and favorite Starrcade match? And I don't know why they're in quotes, because they're real events.
Okay. I'm going to be...
Starrcade might be hard for me to think of.
I'm going
to
be fairly stereotypical on the WrestleMania.
I'm going to guess is what you're going to say.
You know, I already know what I'm going to say.
Do I know which one you're going to say?
Say it first.
Steamboat Savage,
WrestleMania
3?
Yeah. Okay. it's Savage Steamboat. Why? Because I'm a massive Savage fan. Savage worked his ass off in that match. And, I mean, carried Steamboat to arguably... easily Steamboat's greatest match, because Steamboat was not a fantastic worker. And it stripped Savage of the IC title, kept him looking good in the process, because he hits the elbow without interference and gets a clean 3 count while the ref is out. So Savage wins the match.
But it's also heralded as the first quote-unquote modern wrestling match.
It is. Yeah. It's hyper planned and stylized, you know, but Savage gets that 3 count. This is important from a storytelling angle, because Steamboat wins with a small package roll up after the ref comes back, after Steamboat does attempt some interference. And it's good because Steamboat still gets the victory.
He gets his
revenge. But he gets the IC title stripped of him so he can move on to bigger and better things. That was the whole point of the match. The IC title to Savage at that point was dead weight. Starrcade, the only one that I can think of that I know off the top of my head is, and this was an undercard match, but I remember very much enjoying it. I haven't watched it in a decade and a half, so I'd have to go back. But, Jushin Thunder Liger, Rey Mysterio, Starrcade.
97,
maybe? 96.
96?
96. I like it because as much as I like Mysterio, Liger wins. At that point in time, it was kind of an American's first taste of the Japanese wrestling style, because Liger was huge in Japan.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was always WCW's strong point.
By the way, you're almost out of the frame.
Whatever. People don't need to see me. WCW's strong point was always its undercard.
Yeah, it was.
And that was a really good undercard match that I remember from Starrcade.
All right, what are mine? Starrcade, I can't even, you know what? To me, all the Starrcades blended, because the WCW...
Sting Hogan? Flair Hogan, I think?
Sting Hogan was destroyed by the bad ending where it was a fast count where it was.
Yeah, that was awful.
That was terrible. Right. Either Nick Patrick didn't actually count fast enough, or the whole thing was meant to be that Hogan there was no. Either way, it was fucking awful.
Because yeah, that's right. No, you're right. The ending was bad.
It was really bad. And I remember watching it live in college and being like, what's going on? Because he built up Sting as he's going to beat Hogan, and Hogan seemed like he didn't.
That's right,
because
they vacated the belt the next night.
Kind of weirdly.
Yeah.
That was the beginning. That was the beginning of the end of WCW, not the finger poke of Doom a year later.
I don't think it was the finger poke of Doom. I don't think it was. I think it was.
That was, because that wasn't a clean. That should have been the point where NWO was defeated and then split up, and then at that point,
I think it was Hogan Warrior, because they brought in.
Well, that was really bad.
They brought in Hogan to work. They brought in Warrior to massage Hogan's fucking ego.
Yes.
Warrior pulled off like 3 whole wrestling moves in like 3 months of build up, and that match was like 20 minutes long.
It was terrible.
At least 10 minutes of it was just the NWO beating up Warrior. Anyways, your favorite WrestleMania match.
Well, I was going to say, I do love the Hogan Hogan Warrior WrestleMania 6 match. I do like it just for the fact that it was really the first time you had a huge face versus face that were both huge fan favorites. And it wasn't the best match.
It's a shitty match from a work standpoint. It's a great match from an emotion standpoint.
From the emotion, and it was supposed to pass the torch to Warrior, even though he had problems. He left the company a year later for a short time. Whatever else. At the time, it was a huge match because what usually for WrestleMania is you knew who was going to win. The good guy was going to win. And this, they were both good guys.
Right.
So you actually didn't know where you're going to go. Hogan at that time had been the face of the company for 6 years. Six full years, if not 7. And so for him to lose that, it was like, wow, it was a big moment. Passing the torch and then... Whatever.
That's a good one. I don't like Hogan.
How about your man Savage, his retirement match, WrestleMania 7, against Warrior? And that was really Warrior's best match that he pulled out of Warrior.
Well, that's the thing about Savage is he later on in life he lost his ability to work. But I mean, if you go back and you watch early Savage brought the best out of almost everyone he worked with, and that was what was so much fun about him. That and his persona was. Whereas Hogan's persona appeared to be fueled by strictly cocaine, Savage's persona seemed to be fueled by a mixture of cocaine and talent.
Okay, there you go. And for Starcade. Which not the he didn't specify. I can go back to the 80s show, video game show.
Well, that's what I thought when you said Macho Man. I don't remember it, but there was a Starcade Macho Man Flair. I'm fairly certain.
Was the first Starcade when it went? Was that the first one? No, that was Clash of the Champions when it was the draw match Sting versus Flair. Mm-hmm. I remember watching it as a kid, mm-hmm. And he had him in the Scorpion Deathlock, and the time ran out. That was the first Clash.
I don't know if that was the first one, but I do remember that.
I watched that a lot. Either somehow turning on TBS and then watching WCW is how I got into it, like 91, 92. So I honestly cannot think of a Starcade match that I really loved. It's probably some DDP match because I love DDP. Was DDP Giant a Starcade match?
DDP something was Starcade. DDP something for the...
When he had the bad ribs and Giant was beating the shit out of him.
I don't know if that was Giant, but DDP does have a Starcade match that's pretty well known. And I can't remember what the hell it is right now.
I just love DDP.
Yeah, me too.
DDP is like my favorite.
One Saw 5-5.
It's from Jersey. The Jersey Triad. Bang! Now he does yoga.
All right, we're awful. Anyways, continue.
Yeah, now we're just pandering to ourselves. This is from Christina at Shibi UFO, who's usually a fan of the podcast, usually in the chat room. Question for both of us. What have been your biggest disappointments in video games? Disappointments. What were you anticipating that was a big letdown, besides DuckTales Remastered, which you still haven't played?
I can actually think of two off the top of my head. One was Shadows of the Damned, which came out on PS3 and Xbox 360 about a year and a half ago. It was a Suda 51 title. He was the creative force behind one of my favorite video games of all time, Killer 7. And I thought this was going to be a return to form. The gameplay is actually not awful, but the humor fell incredibly flat for me. And it just wasn't an interesting game in the way that I had hoped. It was actually pretty boring. From like a storytelling standpoint, especially when you're used to something like Killer 7. The other one that I would say is Beautiful Joe.
Really?
Yeah. I was really, really hyped on that. You gotta understand the context of Beautiful Joe is, at that time, no one was doing anything 2D, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Capcom's like, we're bringing this game out, and it's gonna be 2D, and it's gonna be cool. And I was waiting for it, I just don't like games that rely on super gimmicky mechanics like the time manipulation that Beautiful Joe does, the fast forward, the rewind, the slow-mo and stuff like that. And I hated it when I came out. I was super disappointed. I got rid of it within like 2 weeks. Looking back on it now, honestly, if I were to go back and play it, I probably wouldn't be anywhere near as harsh as I was then. But if the question is what was I really disappointed in, Beautiful Joe probably ranks as like my biggest disappointment as far as games go.
I'm trying to think of mine. I was pretty disappointed when I first played Three Stooges, just because I saved up my allowance. I was only getting $2
a
week.
It's a fun game.
I made my bed, I took the garbage out twice a week. I got $2 a week.
Yeah.
So that's literally Electronic Boutique. That game costs $50 plus tax. So that's an allowance that takes $8 a month only. That took 6.5 months to save up for that game.
Fair
and
enough.
This is a time when I only got games. My parents. I don't go off my parents. But I never got random games I wanted. I got games. I got one game for my birthday and maybe two or three for Christmas.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
Not even three. Not even. So, I mean, to invest, that's like buying stocks and having them plummet. And it wasn't that it was a bad game. It wasn't what I was expecting totally, because it was only in Pack Watch at Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
Like a little blurb. I loved Three Stooges as a kid. I grew up on it. The marathons they had New Year's and such. I remember playing it. It was late at night, so we'd get back at like 9:30 and... It's weird. It was like upstairs on this monitor right here playing it on the Magnavox monitor, and just it was a weird feeling, almost like in my stomach, like, oh, I just $50 in 89 was a ton of money for a kid like that. And then all of a sudden all my savings were gone and I bought this game I had to deal with. Yeah, I had no idea what to expect. I don't know if I was expecting a platformer game, but it was not what I expected at all the minigames. So I was disappointed. Well, I love it now, but I was disappointed.
Yeah, no, I understand.
It was just the expectation was different.
Right, it is. And that's the problem with how the games were advertised and marketed and even written about then. Sometimes you didn't know what a game actually was until you bought it. You know, they didn't go out and discuss the genre, especially if you're looking at Pack Watch. That's similar to that, and I wasn't necessarily super disappointed, but... I also rarely got games other than Christmas or my birthday. Usually one for my birthday, two for Christmas, and that was because I had a brother. You know, we'd just share them. But I remember my parents taking me out one day, and, you know, they were like, you can get a Nintendo game. And I insisted on getting Donkey Kong Classic.
Okay.
And I got it, and I remember bringing it home, and I just, even though I kind of knew what I was getting into, it was just like, I could have gotten something that was so much...
Newer.
It wasn't even newer.
You got two games in one.
But... You know, I mean, the thing was, is after a week, I mean, that was kind of the game that sparked my... Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. especially was kind of what sparked my love of really classic, simple, single-screen games, because I was like, well, you know what? It's not a bad game. I just got to suck it up and play it, and, you know, I learned to love both of them, especially Jr. Jr. is one of my favorites.
You were disappointed math wasn't on there as well.
Yes, exactly.
Why couldn't they throw Donkey Kong 3 on there?
Because I love math.
They could have threw 3 on there.
Yeah, no one would have played it.
But still, they could have
because
they're getting space. No. We don't have space for this cement factory. Come on. That was weird. I guess they're... I don't know. Maybe they got a bad ROM or something. This is from at X-Files 2000 1999, so 2000. Is this how I ask questions? No, it's not. Next question. This is from Jerron, who writes for The Punk Effect. Blockbuster's remaining stores have now closed. I actually did not know that. I guess they closed the rest of them.
We have another question from John Randall about that, too.
Do you think kids these days have it too easy when it comes to renting games? Too easy.
Yeah, I think that question was written poorly. Because I don't think they have it too easy. I mean, how do they have it too easy?
Maybe because you can get it from Gamefly for...
Oh, okay, I see what he's... Okay, I see.
Or you have to... But no. Redbox does it, though. You got the Redbox and get it. I don't know.
I don't read all this.
I think rentals are gone for the most part, just because you can download demos now, especially on the PC. And I hate to say it, there's so many games that cost you $5, $10. I think kids rather just buy it with their credit instead of, why don't they rent it? I'll just spend $5 on this game or $10 on this game and just do that.
Yeah. We might as well. I don't read all these questions ahead of time, but I see some through the day. John Randall, I believe Abe Randall in there, asked us one about, you know, how do you guys, any particular emotions attached to Blockbuster closing? So we might as well wrap them both up.
Sure.
First, to address Jerron, I don't think they have it too easy when it comes to renting games, judging by the amount of calls I get every day for where can I rent games. No, they don't have it easy. They can't. I mean, Gamefly is a pretty easy service, but it's also expensive for a kid. But kids, like you said, you can now turn on your 360 and be like, Game X is out, downloading demo, play demo. Do I like it? Yes? Great. Okay. You know, I want this or I don't.
Yes.
As far as do I have any particular memories of Blockbuster, not Blockbuster particularly because... And I'm sure it was like this everywhere, but I have is the Northeast as reference. There were so many mom-and-pop shops that my rental... I do have memories of rental stores, obviously. I used to love going. I used to love it. My mom was like, you can rent a game. My early girlfriends and I in high school, that's what we would do. We'd go to the local rental shop and rent a couple movies. I miss being able to walk into a big room and see it all. I'm not a huge movie buff, but yeah, it does kind of suck to know that is gone. Even when I stopped renting movies because of things like Netflix, I would go and I'd take advantage of the 4 for $20. You know?
I don't feel bad. This is why. They put all the mom and pops out of business.
Right. I don't feel bad for Blockbuster.
We had four chains. We had Hollywood Video, which was a national chain.
Yes.
And they were smaller. We had Palmer Video, which was a regional chain, which you might remember that. They had commercials with an inspector. Yes.
And we had, I remember.
And
that.
We had Easy Video, which was a regional chain. That could have been maybe only New Jersey, maybe New York. So, those smaller chains. Hollywood Video was national, though. And they survived until about 6 years ago, I believe. 6-7 years ago.
Yeah, some aspects of them, the game crazy shoot-off even survived until, 3 years ago.
So, but yeah, you're right. And I brought this up in the podcast or mentioning this in stories or interviews.
We talked about this during the marathon. Because we definitely talked about this.
How they, Mom Pops, and we're talking late 80s. We're talking 88.
Yeah.
I'd say 88 is when they kind of blew up. VHS is by 88, 87. We're starting to get four went up that they're like a couple $100 and $87 is still a lot of money, but it's affordable.
Yeah.
So you have people getting them and you had to spend either $70, $80 just to join a store. Yep. And then you might get two free rentals because back then when they bought those tapes, people understand when VHSs came out for movies, you couldn't buy them in the store. They went to the video rental store and usually the rental stores were paying like $80 or $100 for a tape. And again, in late 80s money. So that's why they needed you to get the money up front. Besides them renting it for, say back then it was $2 for two nights or $2 for one night. So you'd have coupons sent out. I still remember in my head, Magic Star Video. There was a video store in Raleigh, New Jersey by me that looked like it must have been like a bodega. They made it into a rental store. I remember going there and it was rent two for the price of one. My mom took me and I got Super Mario Bros. 2 and City Connection.
Yeah.
You know, and so I love the rental stores and they're always the fondest memory because I played a hell of a lot more games via rental store than ones I obviously owned. I did not own more than 15 Nintendo games. Not more than 15. Yeah. 1-5. And that's with having the system for like a good, 5 years and being on it. So that said, it always has a special place in my heart. And of course, yes, Blockbuster, you could rent games. By that time, the time the Blockbusters came around and swept up all the Palmer Video, they opened up literally 2 blocks from Palmer Video. Palmer Video was gone within a year. So by that point, it was more renting Super Nintendo games because you're into the early 90s.
Right.
And then once you got to the mid 90s, the mom pops were starting to get flushed away at that point. And Hollywood Video remained. Easy Video, I think, was even starting to go away by the late 90s. It makes me sad. So, basically, fuck Blockbuster. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't.
I really don't.
I feel bad. I feel bad when people lose their jobs, counter people.
I do, but I don't care.
But as far as Blockbuster goes, my memories are not of Blockbuster. Blockbuster closing simply serves as a bookend.
Yes.
Blockbuster closing simply serves as a bookend to the end of the rental store period of time.
But you know what? I think it allows other mom pops to now come up. I think there's a place for it. And now they want
because
have
that there's content. Less overhead. When you're not a national chain, there's less overhead. He was an acquaintance. He's a good guy. I just was never a super good friend of him. Who runs a rental store in Buffalo. And as Blockbuster's popularity wanes, he finds more people who go in and they buy the bag of microwave popcorn. And they get the video because it is it's hard to explain to people who never got into it or had that experience, but it is an experience that people still like. Just to do it.
Search for a video. Yeah. There's something about being in a video store versus going on Netflix. Netflix is a new video store where you're going and you're browsing.
Yeah.
But a video store, there's something about you can talk to the guy, he can recommend videos.
You have to commit to it. You can't just stop halfway through and pick something else.
You have to watch it. I have to watch it. You read the back, you have to get it.
Yeah.
I went to Idlewild, which is a sort of like a forest and hiking area, about 2 hours north of San Diego, And they had a video rental store there.
Nice.
Just for them. So that it can survive.
Yeah.
With, like I said, low overhead, and but not, more importantly, not a huge chain that's going to outdo you. So I welcome it, because that means that mom and pop stores are going to rise up again slowly but surely. No, and they are around. It's not like they're not there. There's just less of them.
It's going to, that's a market that still needs to be filled.
Great. What I like about them, though, was the Blockbuster Genesis Championships. I still have the pamphlet up there from like 90, was it 94? So, okay. Damn it, Patrick Ewing missed all those threes. That's why I did bad. Anyway. Also from Jerron, more than 75% of games in Russia are pirated. Thoughts on how other countries are so lax on the issue compared to us? Well, our copyright laws are a lot more stringent in the U.S. than countries over there. For a lot of times because stuff is pirated there because a lot of the games come from here, so why the hell should they care about enforcing the laws when they're not losing money? You know what I mean? There's no money to be lost there. We're also a capitalistic society, so we are a lot more... Our laws are a lot more tighter about controlling intellectual property rights than a lot of countries over there.
Correct. And a lot of these countries, like Russia or, for instance, Mexico, they don't have the same... There isn't the same game delivery infrastructure that there is here. So sometimes the only way to really get a game is to find the people who are willing to get it there, which a lot of times in modern times becomes pirating the game and getting it there. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's a great thing, but if like I said, if the infrastructure does not exist there to get you to the game legitimately, well, or if in the case of Mexico, where, like, for instance, when New Super Mario Brothers 2 came out here, it was a $40 game. If you converted that, like I saw a copy down there, if you do the conversion, it was a $70 game down there. So
what conversion? What do you mean?
From pesos to US dollars.
Oh, okay.
It's a $70 game for a 3DS game.
Wow.
In Mexico. So there's a reason why that when you don't have the... When companies aren't shipping games over there, when they don't have the inroads necessary to do it, the piracy rate is going to rise because the only way to get the legitimate copy is to pay 2, 3, 4 times the amount of what it's actually worth.
Sure. This is from at Michael Morgan, I guess. Oh, Michael Morgan. Is a Vectrex system rare or just a piece of junk? I'm not sure why they'd be
weird phrasing.
I'm not sure why they'd be necessarily mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
But it's not a piece of junk. The Vectrex is a very nice
system. No, it's not a piece of junk at all. And it's sort of rare. I mean, it's going for money now.
I consider it obscure, not so much rare. If you want to get one, you can get one.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to try very hard. I mean, you go online.
I found one at the swap meet.
Yeah,
I know a guy who found the 3D imager at the swap meet, which still gets me like this.
You got one sitting on our shelf in La Mesa.
Yeah. No, it's a fine system. I think it's fun. It's nice to have it. It's just that shipping kills you on eBay. So if you don't find one in person, you're going to be paying the same amount to ship
because it's a mini TV. Yeah.
But no, it's great.
Spike. Such a weird way to put it.
Oh no, Molly.
Yeah.
Darn it.
That's right. Is it rare or just a piece of junk?
This is from... I'm going to say it wrong again. No, actually, no. I'll do it first. Yeah, I'm going to say it wrong. At Jason Nakarado?
Rado.
Nakarado. What's your favorite food? I'm tapped out, guys. What's your favorite food?
He asks a question every week. I love to eat. A lot of favorite foods. Probably something Mexican. Let's go with... Adobada tacos.
What? The Adomano?
Adobada. Or El Pastor. Adobada is...
I know,
like,
Pastors are the pork ones.
Yeah, Adobada is pork as well, but that's generally roasted oven. El Pastor is on the spit with the pineapple, sometimes with a pineapple piece on top.
Really?
And it's carved almost like a gyro meat, but it's not, really? It's not formed like a gyro meat. It's just layers and layers of pork on a spit.
Where do they have that? They don't have...
You can get it that way at Lydiker's on Voltaire, or go to Tacos El Gordo.
Okay.
Tacos El Gordo is fantastic. So, yeah, let's just say tacos, because that's the easy answer. Buffalo food, though, I do love chicken wings, and I love avocados on pretty much anything.
It used to be, as a kid, you don't find it often. Shrimp Parmesan. Jumbo shrimp Parmesan was probably the best meal I ever had, and I had it in Cape Cod, Massachusetts. And the shrimp were, like, that big. And I remember distinctly, because more harrowing inside of my childhood. My father, we never went to eat to begin with, but we went on vacation, we did. But my father never let us get dessert. He promised to let us get dessert this one time. Me and my sister were so excited we can get dessert. We got the meal, and we could not finish the meal, because it was like 5 or 6 shrimp that big, not kidding, stuffed with crab meat, shrimp parmesan, and we were almost like, no, we can't finish it for dessert. It was one of the best meals I ever had. I was probably only 12. I'd never had shrimp parmesan. I think after that point, most places don't make it or try to do. That's a good meal. Not saying it's my favorite, but that to me is like one of the best meals I ever had in my life. But I love sushi though. I love sushi. If I had a pick, I love sushi. I love nachos. Big nacho fiend.
Cookies.
Brownies. I love brownies.
Cookies. I like cookies a lot. Brownies. And gummy bears.
We'll just name random junk.
Oh
food.
God. Anyways.
Okay. we got to move through this with the reset. At Brandon Oak, how many records does Ian own?
You know, I've never actually counted the entire collection.
Ballpark it.
Yeah, okay, so I did count. Okay, I've got about 80. Yeah, I'm good. I've got about 80 Happy Hardcore 12 inches. I probably have the same amount of late 90s Trance and House. So that's what, 150? I probably have twice that amount of other. I probably have about 450.
Wow.
Yeah.
You can sell those.
No.
this is from at @game_mana. Why haven't we seen a Sharknado video game?
Make it. I don't know.
You know why? Because the commercial would be too expensive. Too much Hollywood commercial. Okay, this is the Blockbuster commercial. We went through
that. We got
that. This is at WB Stillwell. Do you have any tips or game suggestions for a gamer looking to get into graphics collecting? Unfortunately, the past year and a half, me need to talk about that. It's tough.
3 years ago, man. I mean, my recommendation to you would be, if you just want to play the games, please say that's what you really want to do. Get into the PC Engine and start there. It's going up in price, but it's cheaper.
Or get a handy-dandy flash card if you really want
to. Well, I'm saying if you want physical games, one card or one CD for each game, PC Engine is going to be cheaper, but it's getting more expensive. Turbo right now is freaking insane, man. It's insane. Your best bet, join PCEngineFX.com, lay low and lurk, and wait for someone to put their collection up for sale.
Yes.
Message boards are... I stressed this last podcast. Message boards are the best way to get it for cheap.
Yeah, it used to be, I say up until 2 years ago, they were still reasonable, most of the game, except for the rare ones. But now, even the common ones, like Bonk's Adventure will run you $25-$30.
Yes.
Splatterhouse will run you $30, and it's like...
No, Splatterhouse will be more than that.
See, that's what I mean. They used to be like $10-$15, yeah. All these games.
Sure.
You know, because more people got interested in it for whatever, the internet... Or, like, you think people moved on from the NES, maybe because I completed mine, now they want to complete theirs. I don't know. But it seems that's a trend. So there you go. Best of luck to you, Will. I don't envy you. This is from Helen. Hey, Helen. What scene in any video game would be your favorite, whether it be sad, funny, etc.? That's a tough question.
That's actually really easy for me.
Okay.
Spoiler alert. It's from Final Fantasy IX. The marriage of Queena and Vivi. Is completely ludicrous, ridiculous, funny, kind of heartwarming. I don't think you ever really know Queena's gender. It's just a thing. But that is a fantastic scene. It might be optional, but that will always go down as one of my favorites.
I'll say one that affected me very greatly, and this is why it's one of my favorite games, in ActRaiser. When the two people in the town, one of the towns, when the wife dies in one of them. I can't remember the exact circumstance of why, but she dies suddenly. I think there was something really bad. God, I can't remember it precisely. Maybe it shouldn't be my moment, but basically one of them dies, mm-hmm. and it was like a sacrificial thing, and the husband is like... It's weird because there's a lot of religious undertones, obviously,
sure,
to that game, but it was just... It was done in a way that it actually made you feel it, even though it was just like the text scroll. And,
right.
Just, I think it was it the husband that died? I think it was the wife that died. And the husband's there kneeling and praying to you, and it's just really just tugged on your heartstrings. And there's a few things like that happen in the game where people die and sacrifice. And there's the one scene where the one guy is an old man dying, and I don't even care about the religious. It's just a beautiful moment where he wants to be rained on before he dies. And so once you do that, and he dies happily, it's just like it's kind of just a very... And we're talking like these are little guys like that big, and you sure. feel the emotion of it. And it's just like, wow, this game is something. It was ActRaiser is definitely a game that was a lot bigger than the sum of its parts.
Well, I remember ActRaiser having a fairly decent score too, and a good score. I mean, video game music was really important to emphasize emotion back in games like that. Like a good score really yeah. conveys what
it's a beautiful
wanted.
Score. It's yeah. absolutely haunting.
So,
okay. This is from at @mguyer2341. Jimmy Carbon. Tell us the Zelda 2 Christmas story while Nitro Banks loses it, like, in the first marathon. I don't understand the references. Who's Jimmy Carbon? Who's Nitro Banks, but I'm guessing he's referring to the first marathon where I was trying to tell the story at the end and you were losing your mind and you wouldn't let me tell it. This is from at Demon Owen Garth. Seeing how we rarely jump in real life, why is there so much jumping in video games? Because there's nothing else to do in a side-scroller.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually thought about that before, too, how much they overemphasize jumping. But, yeah, when you're on two-dimensional screen, the only other interaction you can have is up. I mean, look at it this way. When you move into 3D games, how many games from the third person actually don't have a jump button? A lot, because suddenly once you can move around in 3D, you no longer need to jump. Or jumping is handled automatically.
That's what Call of Duty is missing. Jump button.
No, it's got a jump button.
Does it really?
Most first, I think. I think
a realistic. So you're a soldier with 75 pounds of gear, and you're going to be jumping around?
I think most first-person shooters have jump buttons at this point, simply as a way to get around what might be snags in the environment.
Yeah. Genesis 1 we did. At Link 2, have console wars gotten out of hand because of the anonymity of the internet? Yeah, I mean, that feeds in a lot. That's in general, people are assholes because they're anonymous, of course.
Yeah, everything has gotten more out of hand because of, you know, anonymity. And even if they put their name or they have a screen name, it's the fact that they can sit in a basement or behind a computer screen and they're miles and miles away.
Yeah.
You know, people take any opportunity to say whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, going back to Adam Sessler, I think he's gotten, like, probably death threats over his saying that it's not.
He a said big he deal. Has. I mean,
it's not a big deal for it to be 720p on the Xbox One. The Call of
right,
Duty
and I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, this is from at that Craig fellow. Question for Ian: if Pat were to be wanting to sell off his entire NES collection, what would you offer for it store price wise? For I guess we're not going to count the NWC cards. What would you give for the just the loose games for the entire set? What would you give?
I wouldn't. If someone if someone came in with this, it would be
too much work.
This is the PC answer that I this is the easy answer I would give. Wow, you've got a full collection of Nintendo games there. You should probably put that on eBay or find a private buyer.
So you wouldn't say I'll just give you like $4,000 for it or whatever.
I mean, if someone was really like, I just don't care, I need to get rid of it. Yeah, I'd go through, but no, I that's not a question I can answer now. Like, I would at least need. If I were to even give you a rough estimate, I would need 45 minutes.
Okay. Now he's looking and thinking.
Yeah, no, now it's going to bother me. Like, what would I offer for a full collection?
Well, you probably would take the top 25, 30 most valuable ones and then average out the rest. It's probably the only way to really
do it. Yes, it is largely what I
or even top 50 most valuable ones.
I would go through every single game that would... Yeah, I would go through and find the most expensive ones and then kind of... offer a lump sum for everything that was, say, worth less than $3 to $5.
This is from at Juan Gutierrez. Have you seen Juario's Google 13 video? No, I haven't. No.
All right. Well, now you know what you have to do.
I haven't seen it. I know there's one on the DS that came out that wasn't really a game. It was more like trivia, and it's not in English, unfortunately, and there's the arcade ones, but there has not been a fucking real... Okay, I'm not going to get into it. I think we're just about done. I think there's like one more. Let me just double check this. And again, we went a little over because we had to retread about 25 minutes, but otherwise we were pretty efficient.
What time is it?
It's 11.
Holy shit, okay.
Okay, this is the last question. This is from good old Mark Carth. Hey, Mark. For things like Fez, does it matter how good or bad the creator is to enjoy a game / movie, whatever? I would say, personally, I don't care. As long as they're not someone who's totally despicable, like a Michael Jackson or Roman Polanski, I can get around it if they're just a dick. I really don't care they're just a dick. I really don't.
That's a good one. Because I think about this all the time with music. Because a lot of bands that I like or music that I like, you know, you later find out that there's something going on. I do agree that there's a certain level. For instance, a band that I liked... when I found out that the lead singer was involved in a domestic abuse case, I just couldn't listen to that music anymore. I was done. It turned me off. I was done. I couldn't listen to it anymore. When I found out that another band that I liked came off as, you know, extremely cocky and arrogant in their interviews, I just said, well, I can still enjoy their music. I'm just not going to read their interviews anymore. Sure. So for something like Fez, I am aware of Phil Fish, I feel like Phil Fish...
It's a funny name, by the way.
I feel like Phil Fish is probably not nearly as bad as everyone makes him out to be. I will say that. I also feel like Phil Fish was extremely confrontational and got a lot of shit thrown back at him because he was throwing a lot of shit. But I will stand by, I don't think he was as bad as people made him out to be, and I don't believe he deserved to have to leave the industry in the conditions that he did because of the shit that he was getting. Would I still play his game? Yes, if I was interested in it. I am not interested in Fez, not because I dislike Phil Fish. I am not interested in Fez because I'm not interested in Fez.
I think that's fair. I think, I mean, honestly, as long as they didn't do something horrific, I don't care.
Right, exactly. Asshole. He did it. Right, and that's what it comes down to. If you're
the Daikatana guy, I don't care.
Yeah, if you're a loudmouth asshole, but you make something that's good, cool, dude. That's fine. Most artists and creators are fucked up in one way or another.
Hemingway wasn't a nice guy, but he was a great author.
Right.
You know, like,
just don't fucking punch your loved ones or kill people, and I'm pretty much
there's something wrong with them. That's why they have a different way of looking at the world they can produce, whether it's writing. Right. Or being a great actor, or doing NES reviews. No, what? No.
Yeah.
All right, so that's probably our out point there. But thanks for tuning in. We had some snafus, but we're going to get this online tomorrow on the YouTubes, and the podcast will be on. Well, I don't know why I'm saying this to you, because you're listening to this on iTunes.
I really love Stitcher melon tomorrow. Berry snafu. That's my favorite kind.
Melon berry snafu? Is that like a...
Orangeade snafu.
You're just being silly now.
Strawberry kiwi snafu.
All right, well... Again, new NES Punk episode. It's out in Retroware. It'll be on the Punk Effect tomorrow. I review Splatterhouse Wampaku Graffiti. It's my late Halloween episode because the marathon takes up all my October. So go enjoy that, everyone. It's on there. And we're going to see you in 2 weeks. And you're going to be coming back from a wedding by then.
Yeah, I'll be back.
I'll be back. So good timing. Ian, stay in your seat or not. And we'll see you guys later. We're signing off with the Unnecessary Podcast, which hopefully we'll have a produced song for at some point for a bumper. Take care, everyone.